And welcome back. There are plenty of cheerleaders when St. Louis shows signs of growth and development. IKEA, Cortex, and Whole Foods, just to name a few, have been warmly welcomed. But development often comes at a cost, and for some, that's when the cheering stops. With me in studio is Paul Homan. He's an architect with a special interest in rehabbing and adapting historic buildings for reuse. He also writes a blog called Vanishing STL. As older buildings are demolished and allowed to deteriorate, they are gone forever, vanished, and some of our history goes with them. Paul Homan joins me in studio. Paul, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
You know, the replacement of old buildings with new, a lot of people would call that progress.
It's funny you say that because I don't think all demolition is bad. I am not just a preservationist, but I am also an urbanist and understand that to build new buildings or new structures, sometimes you have to remove what is there previously. What's unfortunate is that in St. Louis here, it seems that a lot of times what will happen is a great building comes down and gets replaced with either a parking lot, a vacant lot, or, you know, a McDonald's or a Quick Trip or something like that. So that's, you know, when I see heritage, our heritage in architecturally kind of vanish for, the least common denominator in terms of public use or the public realm, that's when we start to get upset.
But what would your solution to that be then? If we're taking an historic, an older building and we do tear it down, is to replace it with something similar, or what would your approach be?
Not necessarily. I'm actually not an advocate of replicating buildings. I know a lot of, you know, if you go to Lafayette Square and you build a brand new house, you literally have to pick a house that you like and say, I want to make a copy of this house. And I'm not really an advocate for that. I think that buildings should be of their time something that respects the street, something that adds to the visual environment of the city, and in terms of how people travel through the city and when you see a building, what does that evoke anything from you?
Hmm. What is Paul is missing from the city then? If in fact we're putting parking lots and McDonald's in the areas that are left by demolition, what is missing in our whole structure to keep that from happening?
Well, actually, I'd say in most cases there is a good structure. I mean, the St. Louis has the Preservation Board that reviews things in most parts of the city. Although I would certainly advocate for preservation review to be citywide. Currently, aldermen have the choice to basically opt out of preservation review in their wards, and several of them do that. And so, in those wards particularly, we end up losing buildings that in wards with preservation review we wouldn't lose, because there is an opportunity for a review of whether or not this is a significant structure and whether or not it should be torn down.
More citizen involvement? Is that sort of where you would be going?
I mean, obviously, having citizens involved is a good thing. I mean, sometimes that's what it takes to save a building. In terms of a good example of that is what you might remember is the Del Taco building.
Oh, yeah.
on Grand, the Flying
Saucer. Flying Saucer,
yes.
Sure.
A lot of people thought that was kind of an eyesore. It's just a greasy taco joint. You know, get rid of it. And growing up, you know, that was like kind of an icon for us. But a lot of, and even the developer didn't realize that so many people had feelings about that building, and it literally took, basically a protest out in front of the building with people marching around with signs and saying, you know, save our saucer, for the developer and the media to kind of understand, oh, well, maybe we should look into saving this. And, you know, fortunately, the developer, you know, kind of changed their course and took a re-looked at it and said, yeah, we can do this. And now everybody loves it.
Yeah, you know, I've been to your website, and there are a number of properties that you're concerned about and have written about in your blog. Do you get the sense, though, at times that you're kind of whistling in the wind on this?
Occasionally. I think preservationists do have an influence over the city. I mean, I think if myself and you know, I could probably name 20 people like Michael Allen and the Vines brothers and, you know, all the other preservationists out there, mm-hmm. that advocate for a great built environment in our city, if we just suddenly shut up and didn't ever say anything else again about the built environment, you know, I think that would be a there would be less opportunity to save things, and I think I would say we definitely have had an impact over the years.
What about city government and the land clearance utilization folks, people like that?
Good question. LRA, I'd love to see LRA get more into proactive either reuse or kind of, you know, they basically do nothing right now to market their buildings. And if you go to Detroit, has just begun a program where they auction off houses in various neighborhoods and they stipulate, you know, within 6 months you must do this, within 9 months you must occupy the building or have somebody in the building, whether it's yourself or whatever, but you have to do these things. Whereas in St. Louis, you know, yeah, you can buy a building from LRA, but there right now isn't a great you know, way for people to just get online and look at various neighborhoods and do that.
What are some of the properties that are causing you to shed a tear or two?
Well, certainly right now, you know, issues that are kind of hot buttons are obviously the stadium issue has come up, and you know, right, if you look at the footprint of the current stadium plan, it basically blows out almost the entire North Riverfront Industrial Historic District. Whereas literally, if you, and I've looked at this and I'm actually planning to do a post on it, but if you shift the stadium about 200 feet west and just maybe about 50 feet north or so, you could save five, if not six, of the major structures in that district, and actually, you know, have something there for you know, buildings that could be reused for things to do around the stadium, so that you're not just arriving at a stadium in the middle of a giant sea of asphalt on the riverfront.
Of course, our record in this area is not the greatest. I think back to the construction of the Gateway Arch,
yes,
and some of the properties,
yes,
that were lost down there. I
mean, yeah,
truly historic and wonderful pieces of property that were just blown away.
Yes, actually, it's funny you say that, because my kind of fantasy vision of the arch grounds, and, you know, granted, I love, you know, Kylie's landscape, but my fantasy vision of the arch grounds would be to have the majority of the buildings left, and then the arch just kind of like springing up out of the buildings in this kind of more compact, you know, granite paved square in the middle, kind of like what you would see in Europe.
Right. Well, that's not going to happen.
Obviously,
it's not going to happen.
But yeah, I mean, obviously that was, but, you know, back in that time period, people didn't have as much respect for the architecture. It wasn't until the 60s, until people threatened to tear down the old post office, that there was, and in New York, Penn, you know, the Penn Station, demolition really got people going on saving old buildings.
Let's talk about the 500-pound gorilla in the room, and that would be Paul McKee.
Paul, of course, yes.
Paul McKee and the Northside Regeneration Project.
Yes,
That's something you're not particularly happy with.
Yeah, certainly not, since, basically, over a 10-year period, he and his shell companies acquired all of these properties and buildings and just kind of let them rot and really haven't had much to say about it. I mean, the good news is that, apparently his kind of realm is coming to an end because the banks are apparently taking back a lot of his properties. And so hopefully some of those can be put back into productive use. I mean, one of the most infamous ones is, of course, the Clemens Mansion, which, granted, when he got it, it wasn't in great shape, but he could have done a couple thousand dollars worth of temporary roofing on the top of the building to at least keep the water from flooding through it, and now the thing is literally collapsing.
It's all but gone now. It's
savable. I mean, the mansion and the wing off the back of the mansion is savable. The chapel is obviously very compromised since pretty much it's all but collapsed.
Yeah, there are some other things I'd like to talk to you about
sure.
with regard to development here, but we have a call. Let's bring Tony in. He's calling from Wildwood. Tony, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Good day. A question, suggestion. I was wondering if the guest had ever thought of, come across the notion of recording important structures with things like x-rays, sonar, laser, and such, putting it on the web so that, say, 3D printers could print them out in China, that sort of thing. With x-rays and sonar, you could see the number of threads on screws, the shape of the nails, what angles they were put in, and all that sort of stuff. Okay, that's it for the day.
Tony, well, that is really an interesting idea.
Yeah,
preservation through 3D printers.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would really advocate for the 3D printing of old buildings, but the recording and basically the full-scale documentation with lasers and that type of thing is a great idea. Just because it's what I have, I typically just take photographs of stuff, of buildings that are about to be demolished. But that's a very intriguing concept.
Have any of these structures been recreated in miniature form?
Well, actually, that's interesting you say that, because I guess I'm sure you're well aware of the proposal to rebuild a kind of miniature St. Louis arena out on the Chrysler plant site. And if somebody wants to do that, I'm not opposed to that, but I think it's a little kind of, it's kind of like creating a little Disneyland, but it could be intriguing, I guess.
Not the same thing.
Yeah.
I mentioned in my introduction there are some development projects going on here that people are very excited about.
Oh, sure.
One of them being IKEA.
Mm-hmm.
You are less excited, I gather, from what I read.
It's funny. I actually have mixed opinions. I love IKEA. I've been wanting IKEA in St. Louis for years, and I'm thrilled they're here. And I'm thrilled they're coming to the center of the city and not, out at the Chrysler plant or in some cornfield in St. Charles or whatever. It would have been nice because they did choose an urban location. It would have been nice to see a little bit more of an urban site plan. I mean, if you go to Atlanta, the IKEA is kind of right in, again, a very similar kind of midtown location there. And there's a parking garage, and right across the street from the parking garage, there's several new apartment complexes. So, kind of like the ones, some of the ones that are being built, but it's just a much more compact and much more urban scale of things. But obviously, I'm to counter that too is that the Cortex actually had, I can't remember who did the plan, but somebody had done a plan for Cortex that actually showed something like that, kind of a big box store with, you know, apartments or some kind of thing wrapping around parking garages on what is now going to be the parking lot in front of IKEA. And, you know, my hope is that in the future somebody could develop those, but as I understand, IKEA owns the whole site, so I don't know if they, you know, if Cortex retains any rights to develop anything else or not, but they certainly should have done that.
How would you assess overall planning in general with regard to what goes on in our community? The one example I have, and I'll probably be criticized for saying that, I think of Manchester Road and the fact that they just put every fast food place you can think of, just let it happen without anybody really thinking apparently about what should happen. In the city of St. Louis, where are we in with that?
Well, unfortunately, the city doesn't have the budget to do the amount of planning that obviously the planning department would like to do. And fortunately, with the amount of historic districts that we have in the city of St. Louis, there are some controls on that. And through different redevelopment areas, for example, if you go to the Loop, there was basically an ordinance passed in 1994 that says you can't do fast food, you know, joints on Del Mar or, you know, and on a couple of the streets around there. And so compared to most of St. Louis County, I'd say the city is better protected, but in some cases not, because it's kind of haphazard in terms of where those restrictions lie, because then you look at the Grove area and, you know, what just got built kind of at what could have been a great entrance to the Grove at Vandeventer and Shoto, and now there's a giant Quick Trip right there that took out a few decent buildings.
Does the city need a Joe Edwards to kind of take over and ramrod these things?
I mean, certainly that would be
maybe
also,
it's a job for you.
Yeah. If I just need some deep pockets. I mean, obviously, you know, somebody with deep pockets could do some great things for St. Louis, but I think from a government standpoint, it would be nice to, even with the restricted budgets that are available for planning, I think that the city could do a better job of kind of planning how things are built. And for example, the city of Toronto has very strict standards for how a fast food restaurant is built, and it has to be built in urban fashion up to the sidewalk so that people can walk along the sidewalk, walk in and get their burger or whatever. And, you know, if they want to drive through the backside, they can do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you could affect the changes you think are necessary to both affect preservation and also not inhibit progress, what would you do?
Well, certainly just kind of what I mentioned in terms of the planning process. Obviously, you know, directing development, or at least attempting to direct development towards areas where, you know, there's more vacancy or in terms of vacant land available or where there are buildings that are able to be rehabilitated, is kind of a start. But unfortunately, you know, in a market economy, you can't control everything. So
that's kind of where we started.
Yeah.
I said some people call it progress
that. You know, everything, cities always evolve and no, you can't save every building, and it's absolutely not feasible to do that. And, you know, some people kind of poo-poo preservationists, you know, saying, oh, you guys want to save everything, and then, you know, some people do want to save everything, but most of us, I think, have an understanding that, you know, that sometimes a decent building has to come down, you know, to build a larger or better building in that spot.
One of the interesting things that's going on in our time is just about up, is the fact that St. Louis bricks have become such a prime commodity in other parts of the country. So a lot of buildings are being demolished just for the bricks.
Yeah, unfortunately, we send a lot of our bricks down the river to you know, Texas, New Orleans, and people love our red brick, and Yeah, it would be great to. In fact, I know somebody started something a few years ago, but I don't think it really took off. But the idea of kind of creating a brick bank, where buildings that are demolished, he basically was hoarding brick for reuse, for the construction of new buildings.
We only have a few seconds left, sure. 30 seconds. What do you want folks to take away from this discussion?
I would say just, to be I think St. Louis has a great asset in its built environment and the historic structures, and a lot of people realize that, and I think just a greater awareness of people that what we have here is special. You go to a lot of cities and you just don't see the architecture that we have here.
That's Paul Holman. He's an architect, and also he runs the Vanishing STL website, which we'll have a link to on our website, Paul, so that people can learn more about what you're up to.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. That's it for us for today. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll hear Dale Singer's conversation with Fred Pistello as he completes a year as St. Louis University president. We'll also take a look at the controversy over introducing the rideshare Uber X in St. Louis, as well as its impact on transportation in the region, should it be accepted here. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. This program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.